This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Earlier this year, 25 highly respected educators from the U.S. and Canada were selected as 2014 Lindblad Expeditions and National Geographic Education Grosvenor Teacher Fellows. The fellows take expeditions to places such as Iceland, Greenland, Antarctica, sailing aboard the ship National Geographic Explorer for a hands-on experience, professional development, and what most would say is the trip of a lifetime. Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden lead education program developer Sarah Navarro was among that select group of 25. Last month, she sailed aboard the National Geographic Explorer to the Canadian Maritimes, and she joins us to share highlights of her expedition. Thanks very much for joining us, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Sarah, for those who may not know much about the Grosvenor program, tell us about what are the goals of that program?
Yeah, the Grosvenor Teacher Fellowship program is designed to be a professional development experience for educators, both formal and informal. And the goal is to select educators that have components of geographic literacy woven into what they teach their students. And the idea is that they will go on these amazing expeditions and see different parts of the world than they may have seen ever before, and bring back what they've learned and some of what they've gathered on those expeditions, and bring it back to their students or their audience and share a little bit about it and tie it in to maybe what's going on in your local region, but just increase geographic literacy in the students that they work with.
What did you have to do to be picked for this?
Oh, I had to fill out an application that was available online, and it was due in the very beginning of January. So I worked on it over Christmas break and turned it in. And from that, I waited about a month until I heard from them that I was selected. And the application is essay questions that have a 250 word limit on them, which can be kind of hard when you're really excited about something to express yourself in that short of amount of words. But that's what I was able to do. And they ask a little bit about your demographics of the place that you work as well, so they can see who your audience would be.
Is the competition pretty stiff for getting to go on these trips?
Oh, absolutely, Mark. There were 1,300 applicants. And
wow.
I felt very, very fortunate to be one of the 25 selected. It really is a dream come true.
That would be an amazing feeling. 25 people out of 1,300, and you're one of them. You sailed aboard the National Geographic Explorer. Describe the ship. What's it like?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's what you would expect a National Geographic Lindblad Expedition ship to look like. It's the trademark navy blue with the gold around it and the white trim as well. And it is a vessel that is a smaller vessel that holds about 150 passengers. And we would be able to sail to places that larger ships would not be able to go to, because it is a smaller vessel and it's ice-breaking capable. So that's why it can go on all the amazing places.
Oh, amazing.
Like the Arctic
and Antarctic.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's there are guest rooms as well as the library and the chart room. And really cool that the bridge is actually open on this vessel, so that you can go and hang out with the captain and ask him about what's going on and look at the log books. It's really, really neat.
This is a rather intimate, personal kind of thing, wasn't it? I mean, you didn't feel like you were with a huge group of people, and you had pretty much the run of the ship, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Then the people that are on there, they talk about how the people who go on these expeditions, it really does become like a little community when you're on there. And that is the case. That truly is the case when you're there.
What kind of projects did you do aboard the Explorer?
Well, I was able to sample some plankton in a couple of places. We went kayaking in the Îles de la Madeleine, which is part of Quebec. It's an archipelago off of Quebec. And I was able to collect some plankton samples there, as well as with a plankton net, as well as in Twillingate when we were going on the Zodiac ships to and from the National Geographic Explorer vessel.
Was the plankton gathering your favorite thing that you did?
It was one of the favorite things, yeah. When you look at the water, you don't see these little tiny life forms that are all around you. And then when you scoop up a little cup of water and look at it under a microscope, it's like a whole new world under there.
There's all that life in there that you didn't expect to see.
Exactly, yeah. And it's really neat. And I was able to share looking at those a little bit with one of my youngest shipmates that was on there. We had one young man aboard, and he was about 8 years old. And so he helped me look at those through the compound microscope and seeing the discovery excitement in his eyes, too, was pretty amazing.
That has to be gratifying because you're an educator. Mm-hmm. You like to see how people react to what they're learning.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And being able to see him discovering things at the same time as I was, it creates a bond, too. That's really special.
Tell me about the part of the world that you got to experience, the Canadian Maritimes. Now, that's the eastern part of Canada on the Atlantic Ocean, right?
Yes, yes. We circumnavigated Newfoundland, and we did have stops in Nova Scotia, as well as on the archipelago off of Quebec. And it is an area that's really rich with culture. There are a lot of different people that throughout time had colonized and settled in that region, including Vikings. And it was a real mixture, like a mosaic of all of those different cultures coming together. And each place you visited was unique but familiar because there was something that tied them all together. And the spirit of the people, they're wonderful, rich, welcoming, kind people. And we felt so lucky to have been welcomed into their culture and have it shared with us through that experience.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation with Sarah Navarro. Sarah, this is an area of the world that's pretty dependent on the fishing industry, isn't it?
Yes, yes. They were, Newfoundland was settled by the Europeans as they followed the fishing stock, as they followed the cod and the cod migration. And so they settled along the coast and fished. And unfortunately, that fishery has collapsed because of overfishing that happened in that region. And so, interestingly, one of the ties that I've been able to make between Newfoundland and the Cincinnati area is the tie between the cod industry collapse and how it affected the local economy, and then the collapse of the passenger pigeon flocks that used to be in this area. And fortunately, we learned from what happened with the passenger pigeons, and moratoriums were established with the cod as it went from subsistence to commercial fishing, just like the passenger pigeon from subsistence to commercial harvesting can just completely wipe out a species. And so they're going through some hard times up there, and they have sort of turned to the oil industry, the offshore oil and then oil sands. They've turned to those as help with their economy, and especially in Newfoundland, it makes up, I think, half of their economy now is the funds they get from the oil industry.
In fact, I think on your blog you were talking about something you heard from a fisherman, how he was lamenting that the fishing industry was disappearing there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, his family had been fishermen for as many generations back as they could remember, and he said that now he has quotas that he reaches very quickly with what he can catch, and he just can't compete with the commercial fisheries. And watching him disassemble a cod was the most incredible thing I've ever seen. He said that he could probably do it with his eyes closed. He is so fast at it, and he is not, it's not something that he can use as his sole source of income anymore. And it makes him very sad because he feels like he's losing the culture of his family, as well as the culture of the region and what founded Newfoundland.
Is this an area that's pretty diverse in different dialects and languages?
Their primary dialect is English, but they speak with a very interesting accent. It's a mix between sort of an old English and a Scottish and some Canadian and a bunch of other things mixed in there. I've never heard anything like it, but a lot of them can also speak French, because of the influence from Canada. And they are just, they're unique in their way of speaking, but it's always very, very kind. It just is a very welcoming way of speaking. It really draws you in.
Now, you had an encounter with an endangered whale on your journey. That had to be breathtaking.
Oh, absolutely. We saw a fin whale. We were actually in the middle of a talk where one of the specialists on board was speaking to us about Newfoundland, and they came over the speaker and said, "I really hate to interrupt, but if everybody goes to the bow, we have a fin whale just off the bow at about 11 o'clock off the bow." And so we all ran up there, and I burst into tears. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And they say fin whales are usually pretty shy, and they usually swim away when they see you. But this one actually came closer to the ship, swam right up next to the ship, and gave us a really beautiful view. And it was just the most moving experience that I had on the entire voyage.
Were you able to get some pictures?
I was, but I had to set the camera on autofocus because I was crying so hard I couldn't see enough to
you
focus.
You were that moved.
Oh, I was. And the people aboard the ship also had great opportunities to take photos, and we all shared our photos with each other.
Did you have any other encounters with wildlife while you were on this trip?
Oh, I sure did. Yes, we went to a beautiful nature park called Salmonir, and they had some injured and orphaned native wildlife there as well. And they had caribou and snowy owls and otter and bald eagle and a bunch of other native wildlife that they were working to rehabilitate to set back out into the wild. And then I also got to see moose, which, like the Viking, were introduced into Newfoundland, but unlike the Viking, were very successful and managed to stay there and eke out a living quite well.
Well, speaking of the Vikings, you got to visit the only confirmed North American Viking settlement. Tell us about that.
Yes, Lansaw Meadows was a place that was actually discovered to be the and archaeologically dug up to and confirmed to be the only North American Viking settlement outside of Greenland. And it was really interesting to look at that grass and just the little mounds there and realize somebody saw that and knew what it was enough to excavate it. And the things that they found there were pretty amazing. Carbon dating from the fire pits to find out what time it was or what era it was from. And looking at the cloak pins and the iron that they found there to figure out that these were tools and implements used by the Norse. And that's how they knew. But it was really neat to see the archaeological dig. But then next to it, they had a recreation of a village. And they had people who were in period costumes acting like Vikings and handing swords and shields to us and letting us feel how heavy they were and working just like they would on a normal day from what they can intune from the archaeological dig.
So you feel like that experience brought history to life for
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
But you actually did get to meet the Vikings.
We did. We did. And those people were committed to their parts.
This was an 8-day trip. Did you feel like those days flew by, or did the time seem to stand still as you took everything in?
Oh, that's a really good question. Most of the expeditions have days at sea, and I had been told that sometimes it would seem like the time went very slowly because a lot of people did have days at sea, but we were hopping from one destination to the next, so everything did fly by. We were going from about 6:30 in the morning till about 9:30 at night every day, and with hardly any time spent aboard the ship, it really did fly by.
You know, we talked to you before you went on this trip, and now that you're back, is there anything that surprised you that you weren't expecting?
The thing that surprised me the most was that it was like another world there. It really was. It looked very different than I had expected. It sounded different than I had expected. And I think when I went in originally, I was thinking the moratorium on the cod industry, it was a good thing and it was helpful for the wildlife, but not really thinking as much about the people aspect of it, which I really should have been. And seeing firsthand how that affected the people there and hearing them all talk about it, it really gave me a different perspective. So what surprised me is how much I was deeply moved by the plight of the fishermen in Newfoundland.
You blogged about your voyage on the zoo's website, and you said something that was interesting. Do you learn from trips like this that geography is about more than just places on a map?
Oh, yes. There's a phrase that National Geographic uses that says geography is the why of a where. It's how a place became what it is. It's so much more than a point on a map. It's a much more full sensory, visceral experience when you go to a place. It's more than just the name of the place. It is the people who live there. It's the culture. It's the biodiversity. It's the tectonics that caused the ground to look the way it does. It's everything from geography to the biodiversity. It's everything.
Was this a bonding experience for you and the other Grosvenor teacher fellows on this trip?
Yes. The other fellow, Jessica, and I were very much so thrown together in a few situations where it was all new. And so sharing a tiny little space together where we slept and then going on these adventures together really brought me closer to not only her, but the other folks that were on the expedition as well. You really do become like a little family, and you share these moments like the fin whale, and you're never the same after.
Now, do you do any follow-up with the National Geographic people as to how you use this trip in your programs?
Yes, we do. We have deliverables that we turn in throughout the rest of the year, and then some fellows will also be asked to participate in some of the selection process and the training of the fellows for next year. But for part of my deliverables that I'm turning in, I am going to be creating lesson plans and sharing those with National Geographic so they can see the tie-in. Creating a blog was part of my deliverables as well as outreach. I'm going to be speaking to a few different groups about this fellowship and sharing a little bit more about geographic literacy and how it can be better tied into what we do every day.
And will you be able to take another trip? Can you go through the whole application process and competition again and go on another one of these?
Oh, Mark, I wish I could, but no, it's a one-time shot because what you learn, you should be able to apply for any aspect of anything you do professionally from now on. But it also gives other people the chance to experience this amazing journey like I did. And I wouldn't want to take that opportunity away from anybody else by doing it again, even though it would be tempting.
Well, talk about the key lessons that you learned on this. What had the most impact on you, and how do you plan to pass that along to the people you work with, the people you educate?
That's a really great question. I think that for me, the most memorable part of a place is the story that it tells. And so what I hope to pass on is the story that Newfoundland told me, and to make tie-ins that make it personal to those that I connect with through both work and then my outreach experiences. And then also to make sure that I incorporate geographic literacy into what I teach and how I teach, because it really is, it's not hard. It's something that helps these kids grow up and make decisions that will affect our world one day. And so knowing more about their planet is something that's really important, something I can share with them, something that I can impart on them so that when they grow up, they know more about the world they live in, not just their own backyard, but how everything they do makes a difference.
So geographic literacy is important to people. It's a way of being a good citizen, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Everything's connected and we all have a part to play.
Now, how do you top a trip like this, Sarah? I mean, are there other places in the world you'd like to see at this point? How do you do that?
Every place on that list where they go is someplace I would love to see, but I'm fortunate with working with the zoo that I sometimes have opportunities to lead expeditions to places that are amazing and full of cultural and biological diversity as well. So I'm hoping that I'll just be able to continue doing that through my work at the Cincinnati Zoo.
And do you have plans to blog any more about your trip? You've done the one so far. Are we going to get more from you?
I hope so. Yes, I have another blog that I am keeping or was keeping as part of this fellowship. So some posts from that I will be sharing. Absolutely.
And you'll put those up on the zoo's website.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay, Sarah. Thank you. Thanks for sharing your adventure with us.
Absolutely.
Just a fantastic trip you just took.
Thank you so much.
The Cincinnati Zoo's Sarah Navarro, she was among a select group of 25 educators who sailed aboard the National Geographic Explorer to the Canadian Maritimes last month. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The Cincinnati Edition theme music was composed by William White. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.